Welcome to the Adopting and Fostering Home podcast. Whether your family has been on this journey for years or you're just getting started, we're here to support and encourage you along the way. And now your hosts, Lynette Ezell and Tara Melber.
Welcome back to the Adopting and Fostering Home podcast. I'm Lynette Ezell, and I'm joined today with my friend of many years, Tara Melber. Tara and I have walked through six adoptions together, and we are still trying to navigate this call, right?
Absolutely.
Still working together to raise our families and usher them into adulthood.
Yes.
And so many topics come up with that. But today, we wanted to begin a discussion that we call myths of adoption. So whether your family's been on this journey for years or you're just getting started, we're here to support and encourage you along the way. We feel it's important to discuss these topics. Some are sensitive. Some you could talk about in a large setting, but we just want you to be able to enter the waters of adoption or foster care with your eyes open.
Absolutely. And these are myths that not only were they questions that David and I had when
right.
we were starting, but they're questions and things that we hear people say to us all the time.
Right.
So these are things that I feel like whether you want to verbalize it or not, these are questions that you might have as you're sort of determining God's call on your life for your family.
And they're not meant to scare you away.
No.
They're not meant to make you anxious. But they're just meant to encourage you and to say, look, if this comes up, this is normal.
Right. And I think that's super important, is to know that these are normal things that can potentially happen within your family that have happened to others, and that others have learned to navigate it. And with the Lord's help, we can also learn to navigate these
Absolutely.
Things.
Absolutely. So let's get started. Tara, you want to get started
Sure.
with the first myth?
One of the first myths that we have is that our adopted child will attach quickly to our family and feel safe and loved.
Right.
And specifically, I think about for us, we brought home, the majority of our children we brought home were a little bit older. And so I think, honestly, I was very concerned about how attachment would be with our family. And so we always talk about having to be the adult in the room when it
yeah.
comes to this attachment issue and feeling safe and loved, and recognizing that they won't necessarily attach and feel safe quickly because they don't know you. We're strangers to one another.
Well, and consider that cycle when you have a baby.
Mm-hmm.
Your baby has a need, the baby cries, mom or dad responds,
mm-hmm.
and a bond of trust is built, right?
Right.
And this cycle is disrupted in adoption.
And it's disrupted whether you're bringing home a newborn
yes.
that has been in a difficult situation,
Great
even
point.
Within the womb, or if you're bringing home a child that's 4, 5, 6, you know, up through teenage years. So they have, like for our children, one of our children lived in an orphanage for 6 years with 70 other children.
Mm-hmm.
So if she was struggling with something, she didn't automatically have someone who could just come and meet her need, not because they didn't want to necessarily,
right.
but because there are 70 children and she's living in a room with, you know, 35 other girls, she's not always going to have her needs met when she needed them met. And so building that bond of trust, it takes time.
It does. It takes a very long time. And something that we did, I know you did, you almost have to get radical with it.
Mm-hmm.
Simplify life and tie down the tent.
Absolutely.
And so just scale back. We'll talk about that some more. But prioritize the adopted child's needs and their need. They have a great need to feel safe.
Right.
Make that child feel safe.
Right. I think a routine initially
yes.
is so vital to our children because they already wonder if they're really staying.
Yeah.
And I know that you have a friend whose son kept a suitcase packed by the door for the longest time because
yes.
he just wasn't sure, is this long term? Is this not long term? Because they've already been through so much turmoil in their life. When we set a specific routine, then they know what's coming next. They know what to expect. And then it builds trust and puts chips in the bank, so to
and,
speak.
And, you know, something I wasn't really prepared for when we brought our child home from Ethiopia, if we pulled out a suitcase, say, to go
mm-hmm.
home and visit family for Christmas, and, I didn't leave her for a long,
mm-hmm.
long time to travel with my husband or anything, but if we pulled out a suitcase to leave for a family vacation, she assumed she wasn't a part of that.
Right.
And she would have a total meltdown, like, She could just lower her breathing
mm-hmm.
and you would and just like go to sleep and just
yes.
totally disengage from the family in a fetal position
mm-hmm.
all over the suitcase because
right.
she assumed I'm not a part of this. So
right.
And that was months and months, even after we'd brought her home.
And to recognize, too, that it is going to take a long time.
Yes.
For you to feel like a full family unit. I was really glad that our program director for our agency said, at about the 4 to 6 month mark, they realize they're not going anywhere. Well, I've been praying for this child for a long time. I already feel bonded to this child in some form or fashion. I'm a total stranger to these children.
Right.
Really. I mean, you can send your photo album or you can, you know, do whatever. But the fact is, you're still a stranger in a strange place. And so knowing that it was going to take time and having somebody out loud say to me, Tara, it could be 4 or 6 months before they realize they're going to stay, and then another year before they really feel like they're grounded. Just like when you move, it takes a solid year and celebrating holidays more than one time for you to feel like, oh, this is really our home.
Right.
It just takes time. That's a small example of what these children are feeling on an exponential level.
Absolutely. And, you know, a friend called me one day and they were considering adopting an older boy, which we had done that. Mm-hmm. It's just been a blessing for us. But I tried to explain to her, you're a year away from a meaningful family conversation at the dinner table.
Yes.
Before that child can feel like they can chime in. Mm-hmm. And it like you said, it does take a good 12 months to get your land legs and get that kind of figured out. And something we really did as well, and the Lord just gave us the wisdom to do this, is just to create a home environment conducive for sibling attachment.
Yes.
Let your sister help you with that. Yes. Or let you have more boys. Mm-hmm. Yours is opposite of mine, 4 boys and 2 girls. Mm-hmm. I have 2 boys and 4 girls, but go shoot ball with your brother.
Yes.
I said, let your brother help you with that.
Right.
And so mom's not always the one jumping in there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we have to remember, too, that we've been going through this process a long time to be able to be a parent to this child. So just as, you know, we love because Christ first loved us.
Mm-hmm.
If we feel like the child is pulling away or maybe they like dad better than they like mom,
mm-hmm.
then we can't get our feelings hurt.
No, it's totally normal.
Totally normal. And we have to keep pursuing. You know, Christ pursued us. We pursue
That's
our children.
Good. Love is a decision.
Love is a decision. And mm-hmm. honestly, we even, our biological children, there are days that they reject us and we have to continue to pursue them.
Right.
So it's our responsibility as the parent to pursue and to choose love.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually when they feel that safety, they will come to you and they will love you and feel like they're a part of
but
the
But it takes
family.
A long time.
It
I remember
does.
When our son came home and my husband traveled some, he just one day he looked at me, he said, you know, Mom, sometimes dads leave and they never return.
Yeah.
And that was after 6 months.
Right.
And I remember thinking, surely you know by now your dad always mm-hmm. returns. He didn't.
Right. Yes, absolutely.
Well, the second myth we were talking about that we were thinking about and wanted to share with you is that since our child, a lot of people think that if you adopt a very young child, that child will have less trauma or less attachment issues,
mm-hmm.
like if you get an infant or a mm-hmm. newborn. We have not found that to be the case.
Mm-hmm.
They do have, it can be different, it mm-hmm. can look different, but the removal of a child from their biological mother creates a traumatic event, even in the life of the child, no matter how old they are.
That's exactly right. Dr. Karen Purvis, the late Dr. Karen Purvis, love her. She often talks about how a baby, even in utero, knows their mom's voice, knows the rhythm of her heartbeat. And when they're removed from that, even as an infant, they recognize this is not the voice I've been hearing in the womb for the last 9 months.
Right.
And in addition to that, there was a traumatic event going on, even the stress level of the birth mom who, you know, maybe knew that she was not going to be able to parent. So those things come into play as
mm-hmm.
well as far as attachment and trauma.
Well, we were in a foster meeting last night, mm-hmm. and a foster mom was there, and she had this beautiful mm-hmm. infant, this newborn. And, you know, she's got all this help. She needs it because she also has biological children in the home, plus her foster children. But the different voices that infant is hearing, you know, mm-hmm. I know that's challenging. So mm-hmm. even as a foster family,
right.
you know, that can be a challenge. But trauma doesn't tell time.
It doesn't.
And that's what we have to remember. When we went to go pick up our dog, Lucy, she was in a very bad place. And so she lived outside and she was terrified. So she was in all the elements. There was no doghouse, nothing mm-hmm. to cover her, no shelter. And even at 7 years old, which is 49
right.
in human years, she still is terrified of storms or mm-hmm. rain or a gunshot. And we kind of live out in the country. So those kind of things, she never has gotten over that. Okay, mm-hmm. that's a dog, right?
I know. And she belly crawls.
Yeah,
that's
she military crawls yeah. me through the neighborhood if she hears, you know, 1 ounce of thunder.
Right.
But we have to create an environment that says your pain can come up at any time.
Yes.
And it's okay to share that pain. It's
yes.
okay that you are dealing with this trauma and you don't know why.
Right.
And it may have happened to you 15 years mm-hmm. ago.
Right.
I remember one time my mom looked at me and said, she was about 50 years old, and I never forget this, and we were talking late one night, and she said, you know, you never, ever truly get over divorce as a child,
mm-hmm.
because she had lived that. She was mm-hmm. 50 years old.
Right.
But when a child feels truly safe, you and I have both seen that positive change can come.
Happen.
It doesn't mean that trauma goes away,
never.
But they do learn to manage it.
One of the best analogies that I ever saw was taking a ribbon. I
yeah.
did this with two of our kids, taking just a ribbon, and while I'm talking, tying a loose knot, and then tying a tight, super tight knot, and then kind of a medium knot, and just having a conversation. Generally, it's about some serious topic. And then I've handed the knot to one of our kids and said, okay, untie all those knots. So of course, the loose one's easy. The medium one took a little extra time.
That's great.
And then the really tight one, they couldn't get done. And as I laid that little ribbon out, I said, so these are things that have happened to you in your past. This one was super traumatic. This one was mildly traumatic.
Right.
This one was I scraped my knee outside playing basketball. But do you see all of the creases that are in, like the tighter knots, all those creases? Let's take it upstairs. We get an iron. We're ironing, ironing, ironing. You know how some things just do not iron out. And I said, look, I can make this look a little bit better, but some of these creases will always remain.
Right. And we all have that in our lives.
We all have it uh-huh. in some form or fashion. For our children who came out of really tough situations, their creases and their ribbon are way more difficult
mm-hmm.
than the creases that I've had in my life.
Mm-hmm.
But I often say to the kids, because all of our kids have made a decision for Christ, the Lord can restore you on this earth. He can help give you coping mechanisms
That's
to be
right.
able to live a productive, wonderful, fantastic life. There may be times, though, that something comes up that triggers a thought from your past, but you have to take every thought captive and
right.
recognize that those creases do not define who you are. So even when they're young, as they grow developmentally, if you bring home an infant, as they developmentally grow, they're going to realize there is a reason I'm not with my biological parents.
Right.
Or as your 11-year-old that came home, or my 7-year-old that came home, who have memories of difficult things in their life, or recognize that there was abandonment or neglect.
Mm-hmm.
That does not define you. So eventually, one day, we'll all be restored and
right.
there'll be no more tears. But until that day, the Lord will use all of those things in our life to develop us into the human being that He has called us to be.
And you just can't put a timetable on it.
You can't.
I adopted an infant, so they'll never, you know, like the 1950s,
mm-hmm.
we won't mention adoption,
right.
they won't feel any different. That's not true.
Exactly.
And that leads us to our next
mm-hmm.
myth, that our family can love away our adopted child's past
their
pain. Exactly.
Oh.
And you know what I've learned? We got to remove all pride here.
Yes.
There is no shame in help.
No.
There is no shame in saying, our family needs some help here.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that's what's really hard is that we feel like the Lord called our family to fostering or adoption.
Right.
And so we don't want to be the person who keeps other people from wanting to do that. So we want to say, oh, everything is great.
Yeah.
It's all wonderful.
Exactly.
That's just ridiculous. We all are going to walk through struggles of some sort. We're going to walk through tons of victories. And so being able to share all of those things and remove those pride issues and say, I really do need some help. I really need you to be praying, because during this season of life, our child is really struggling with the fact that they were abandoned.
Yeah, neglected. In private, not in front of the child.
Exactly.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Right. Absolutely. And so, as Tara says, what you're describing here, Tara, is modeling Christ.
Yes.
You know, and reiterating to the child that he brought you to us. He's bringing mm-hmm. healing. And we want you to know what he's... I tell my children, look, the Lord saved my mom and dad when I was 5 years old.
Yes.
And my home was turned upside down. Mm-hmm. I mean, our home was a mess. And the Lord brought healing to our
right.
home. And my past, you know, I have this that past memory of the Lord's healing. And I see it fleshed out. And even when the Lord took my dad home, he went home in healing, what
yes.
the Lord had done in his life.
That's
and so
right.
the same thing for our adopted children, mm-hmm. Especially older children. And we have to wait on their timetable to
yes.
share, Mom, here's what I'm dealing with. Sometimes they cannot articulate
right.
that.
That's exactly true. One of the things that we've really, I know your family does and our family does, is I can give you my opinion on how I think you should cope or how you should handle things.
Yeah.
But we have to point them back to Christ, because
yeah.
he is the great healer of all things. And recently you and I were in a study of Habakkuk, which was a really fun book to study. But one of the passages at the very end of Habakkuk in chapter 3, it says, though the fig tree does not bud and mm-hmm. there are no grapes on the vines, though the olive crop fails and the fields produce no food, though there are no sheep in the pen and no cattle in the stalls, and we all feel that way sometimes.
Yes.
I will rejoice in the Lord. I will be joyful in God, my Savior. And this is the best part. This is where you point those kids right back to this. The sovereign Lord is my strength.
That's right.
He makes my feet like the feet of a deer. He enables me to go on the heights.
That's right.
So even in those timetables where your children are struggling and talking to you, making sure that you have open conversation and that you're willing to listen and not feel defensive or shell-shocked when they bring up their struggles, and then to be able to point them back. Though these things have occurred.
Exactly.
The Lord, the sovereign Lord, is your strength.
Right.
And he can enable you to do anything.
Right. I remember realizing when one of our children came home that this child had a lot more pain
mm-hmm.
and really scars.
Yes.
Than I realized. I'm saying physical scars.
Right.
So we knew the past had been rough.
Mm-hmm.
We knew that this child was malnourished.
Right.
Even more so once we saw the child than, you know, than we had been told.
Right.
So it was a much dire situation than what we had been told about. And I remember the Lord just laying up on our heart, when this child goes to sleep at night,
mm-hmm.
get your face in the carpet.
Absolutely.
Beside the bed. And so prayer has just been the foundation for us doing this, because we cannot love away
no.
their pain. We cannot love away the starvation they faced, or the illness they faced,
right.
or the separation they faced when being ripped away from a parent, or, you know, what they lived in their first 5, 6, 7, mm-hmm. 10 years. But we can pray and we can seek the Lord, and we can
right.
daily offer this child back to the Lord.
Right. Just like when someone loses their spouse.
Yeah.
You can't erase that pain.
Right.
I can't erase the fact that one of our kids remembers both of his parents passing away from illnesses that they should not have, that in the United States would have been easily treatable.
Yeah.
I can't fix that.
Right.
And though I want to, because as parents who love your children, you want to make it all better.
Right.
But I can point them to Christ and say, he is the one who can restore you and heal you. That doesn't mean the pain goes away.
Right.
But it does mean that he helps you learn how to live in it.
That's right. That's right. Very good. Well, the next one we talked about is that our adopted child, this hit me between the eyes, our adopted child will behave as other children his age.
Right.
And so,
who said that?
Exactly. But that was in my head. You know,
right.
when we bring him home, he's just going to go right in the classroom and be
sure.
right where he's supposed to be. But you have to look past that chronological
yes.
age, don't you?
You really do. You really do. Even though, you know, for the foster kids that we know, or
yes.
children who've been in difficult situations here, they haven't. They may be in school, but they're not getting
no.
healthy snacks at home,
no.
help with their homework. They're having to be, many of them have a lot of street smarts. So the older ones know how to take care of the younger ones. We were listening to a gal last night talk about at 7 years old, her responsibility was to get all of her siblings ready for school, cook, clean,
yes.
do laundry.
She was running the home at 7 years old.
That's
dysfunctional.
It is dysfunctional. But that, you know, then in other ways, she may not know how to relate to other seven-year-olds as well because she's having to do all of these other responsibilities.
Yeah.
So looking past their chronological age and seeing where they are developmentally and then developing a plan of saying, okay, these are the things that we need to work on in this social area or in their emotional intelligence of how they relate to others or academically they're super behind because they have not had the opportunity.
No.
We had one of ours who had never even, God love his soul, he had never sat down for more than 5 minutes straight, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
So to put him in a classroom
yes,
was,
that's
oh,
how our son
my
was.
Word.
Yes. Yes. Kevin went to, my husband went to our son's school where he was adopted from. It was a big public school.
Mm-hmm.
And he said it was just like a circus. Mm-hmm. Like people were just coming in and out of doors, kids. And it wasn't the structured classroom that we think of today. And so
right.
therefore, our son did not get, you know, he didn't get a lunch.
Right.
So he was there all day in the heat.
Mm-hmm.
There was no water.
Right.
And so it's just not, it wasn't a conducive environment for learning. We bring him home to the States. We put him in the school our kids go to, and he begins to regress.
Right.
And even more, once he's clingy, wants to sit
yes.
in the teacher's lap, that
mm-hmm.
sort of thing. And so those were some hurdles we had to get over
right.
and work through and have patience with and take time that we never thought about.
And if you think, even when you're bringing home an older child, that they've not had love and affection,
yeah.
or if they've had any affection, maybe it wasn't the right kind of affection.
Yes.
So to teach them the appropriateness of, you know, when it's okay to hug someone.
Yes.
Or maybe they do just need to sit in your lap as an 8-year-old
right.
and feel really loved,
right.
like rocked or like almost baby-like because they got to kind of go back and get that they never received.
Well, we had to regroup that spring
mm-hmm.
when we brought that child home. We had to regroup, and we just started, he and I just started homeschooling together.
Right.
And so if he felt like he needed to sit close to me
mm-hmm.
or he always had to be in the same room as I was. And
mm-hmm.
I was working at the school 2 days a week, so he went with me.
Right.
And so we just focused on doing math problems
yes.
and reading books together
right.
and praying together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had lunch together. So we had that time. We have a large family.
Right.
And so we had that time together when the other 5 children were
yes.
out of the home. And he
yes.
needed that. Although my original thought was, well, bring him home. He's going to go right into
right.
the school system and it's all going to be great.
Right.
It did not look like that.
No. I can remember taking our daughter to school. Our program director at our agency said, give her, you know, solid 6 weeks of real structure at home to be able to be with your family. And then it will be okay to put
That's
her
great advice.
In public school. They were awesome to help
yeah.
me with that. So I did. But in my little small town where we were, this was a very different concept for them to bring home a child into your family who didn't look like you, and she spoke very little English. And I can remember the second grade teacher saying, she's not going to pass second grade. And I said, oh, she is. This is not, like, all this academic stuff,
right.
not that important right now.
Right.
I need her to learn how to sit in a circle, make a friend, and go through the lunch line.
There you go.
That's our goal.
Because
mm-hmm. it was the end of the school year. It's
right.
not like, she said, I just am in good conscience, can't move her to second grade. And I said, well, this is not going to be what your problem is.
Right.
Right now, this is our goal.
Right.
And she was super gracious, and our daughter did fine. But, I mean, fine.
Exactly.
She learned how to go through the lunch line.
The goals were met.
The goals
right.
were met. So, chronologically, she, you know, in her age group, we did hold her back a year until she was able to catch up. But there were lots of things that she didn't know how to do that all the other kids way knew how to do like 3 years ago.
Right.
And so the teacher was just a little shell-shocked, like, I don't know how to do that. And that's where a lot of conversations, a lot of advocacy in the school system is really important.
Well, I was going to start another topic, but let's piggyback off
yes.
of what you just said. And let's... This is one that I was super surprised by when we, my daughter adopted our granddaughter, that doctors and teachers will understand and be a
mm-hmm.
strong support. That's sometimes that happens.
Right. And if it does happen, glory be
exactly.
to the Lord.
Exactly. That's icing. But I did not find that to be the case myself.
And the deal is especially specifically for teachers, you almost have to cut them some slack here because they are doing such a great job. But this is a wrench thrown into everything,
right.
And it's very difficult. So if they've never done it before, it's a lot of conversations. So I always laugh at the kindergarten teacher. Your kids had her too. But when Jonas started kindergarten, it was half day. He spoke zero English.
Yes.
But, oh my gosh, his little adorable face, I'll still see it. But on the days that I was having a bad day thinking we're never going to survive school, the kindergarten teacher was saying things like, but Tara, look at the progress he's made.
Oh, wow.
Then 2 weeks later, she's saying things like, oh my gosh, I'm dying. But Julie, look at all the progress he's made.
Exactly.
So it was a great partnership. When she was good, I was terrible. When I was terrible, she was good. Thankfully, we were never both awful at the same time.
When we moved to a new city, I took the kids and we tried the public school. They were good, and so I put the girls in public school and our son and my first grader. I remember a teacher pulling me aside, sweet Christian gal, still friend of ours today, but she spoke some truth into my life, and she said, "This school is very aggressive. It's sink or swim."
Right.
And she said, "My daughter couldn't make it here, and your daughter's not going to make it here. So you may want to really pray about," she just pulled me aside quietly and said, "you merely may want to pray about other options."
Which is great.
And she was right.
Yes. And that's awesome. And I do feel like that you can get the help that you need, but it's a lot of words.
Yes.
A lot of conversations.
Yes.
And, you know, when you were talking about doctors, a myth that maybe the doctors will understand or be a strong support. In this day and age, when these babies are being born addicted to different things, there's not a lot of studies on what does that look like when they're 18.
Right.
You don't really know.
You don't. Mm-mm.
So there's a lot of unknown, and that makes it very difficult because as a new parent, you want answers of, why is this newborn sneezing constantly?
Exactly.
And they can give you that medical reason, but when you say, well, what is that going to mean for my child in elementary school? They don't know.
And I was very surprised by that. Like I said, when our daughter adopted her baby domestically, but we realized quickly that we had to be their greatest advocate.
Yes. Absolutely.
And we had to set them up to succeed early, like you did with your daughter.
Right.
Let her pass that grade.
Right.
Let her learn, because you're going to give her. Because
then we had the whole summer to really work.
You did.
On academics.
You did. And it's kind of like their brain wakes up.
Right.
In education. And one of our children has been home 9 years, and I feel like this year we're really waking up in the classroom.
Well, I said for two of the three of ours, it took us 5 years. To get on level.
5 years.
5 years,
yes.
Which when you are on the front end, you're thinking 5 years, but that doesn't mean it was 5 years of pain. Sometimes it was painful, but it meant 5 years where I felt like I didn't have to be the continual pusher and the continual advocate. So will doctors and teachers understand and be a strong support? Maybe, but don't have the expectation that they're experts in this, because they're not, and it's not like we should expect them to be.
Right.
You have to work together as a partner to be able to help your child be the most successful.
That's right. That's right. And we're building a bridge to the world for our children at school, at church, social settings. As parents, the Lord's leading us to build that bridge so that they can cross over.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, Psalm 107:41 says, "He raises up the needy out of affliction and makes their families like flocks."
Mm.
And in my Bible, I have that highlighted in my study Bible that just looks butchered, you know. But beside that, I put, "Lord, you built our family."
Yes.
"And you're making us strong like a strong flock."
Right.
And he is doing that for us. So we hope these first five myths have helped you today. But you've been listening to The Adopting and Fostering Home with me, Lynette Ezell, and Tara Melber. It's a resource of the North American Mission Board. So for more information or to connect with us, we have some relevant resources. We have some more suggestions for you. So you can visit nam.net/sinrelief. Thank you so much for joining us today.
You have been listening to The Adopting and Fostering Home, a resource of the North American Mission Board. For more information about today's podcast and other relevant resources, visit namb.net/sendrelief.